Good afternoon, this is Dr. Dan Guerra, and you're listening to Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today's 28 April, 2024. We're going to be working on lecture number 13 on immune cell biochemistry. This is going to be subject matter number one. And within that subheading, we're going to be talking about T lymphocyte membrane biochemistry. And that's what we've been doing now for these now starting to be 13 lectures. So let's get right into where we were last time by talking about lipid metabolism playing a significant role in the entire T cell mediated immune response. Remember this, T cells are first activated by the interaction the T cell receptor with antigen-presenting cells. Dendritic cells are very common, and also macrophages. Now, there are alterations that are possible in the activation of the antigen-presenting cell by omega-3 fatty acids, or actually in T cells individually by omega-3 fatty acids. Or once synapse, there's a potential correlated mechanism by which omega-3 fatty acids may modulate T cell activation in unison with the entire interaction. So to activate a cytotoxic helper T cell to proliferate and differentiate into a true effector cell, an antigen-presenting cell provides two kinds of signals. This is standard canonical discussion here. Signal one, provided by the foreign peptide to the MHC, that's major compatibility complex. And those proteins in humans are called HLAs. And that's presentation on the surface of the APC. So the peptide MHC complex signals through the T cell receptor and all of those associated proteins, many of which are glycosylated, and all of which maintain a position on a membrane lipid raft that's working as the platform, which is the T cell receptor complex, that has been translocated to the plasma membrane of the T cell, a priori to the activation, but then manipulated once activation is initiated by that antigen presentation and by many other factors, including chemokines and cytokines, already on hand to mediate this initial response. So, first signal, foreign peptide bound to the MHC protein from the presenting cell. Signal two is provided by a co-stimulatory set of proteins, especially the B7 proteins, which are CD80 and 86. They're recognized by the co-receptor protein CD28 on the surface of the T cell. The expression of those B7 proteins on the APC is induced by the pathogen during the innate immune response upon infection. Effector T cells then act back to promote the expression of those B7 proteins on the antigen-presenting cell, creating a positive feed-forward mechanism to ultimately amplify the T-synapse-associated response. So signal two amplifies the intracellular signaling process, and that's triggered by signal one. So there's a hierarchy, which is temporal. Now, if a T-cell receives a signal one without signal two, it may quickly undergo apoptosis, or it becomes altered in a way we call anergy, so that it can no longer, at least spatiotemporally, for some time, be activated. And that can occur even if there are it receives signals to be activated. Now, it doesn't mean anergy is absolute, but it is definitely a means by which the T cell is taken offline. This is also a way that T cells can become tolerant to self-antigens in case an error is made in that initial activation process. Now, there are multiple lines of evidence to show that omega-3 fatty acids have a role of suppressing the T-cell response. That means beneficial response. Okay? For example, it has been suggested for treatment of autoimmune hepatitis and asthma. That is omega-3 fatty acids. Okay? No changes in the percent of T cells in the blood have been found, however, in mice fed with omega-3 fatty acids. Although there is an increase in Tregs and Th22 and a decrease in Th1, 2, and 17 that has been observed in omega-3 fed mice after induction of an immune response. So it's not prophylactic. You have to have the induction of an immune response first. Now, there have also been no alterations on the percent of T cells or T cell populations in the blood of humans simply after supplementation and diet of omega-3 fatty acids. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't a correlation in cell-cell interactions deep within the biochemical pathways that occur in the membrane. It just means that simple supplementation of omega-3 fatty acids doesn't seem to have an effect on suppressing total T cell count. So, which is essentially an arbitrary number, unless you're looking at an infection induction. Then you could maybe say there was something correlated there, or lack of correlated in this instance. So the effects of dietary omega-3 fatty acids on the abundance of T cells in the spleen is still somewhat controversial. So it's been reported that there is an increase in the number of CD4 positive and CD8 positive T cells in the spleen of mice fed a diet high in omega-3 fatty acid. But that doesn't seem to have any downstream effect on either of those populations in circulation. Okay. So it's hard to say, well, and this again is the mouse, not the human, right? And we have caveats that are necessary to maintain here when we're talking about any of these studies in mice. And you know what those caveats are. I mean, they are plenum and florid, as I like to say. So we don't need to worry about bringing all that up again. But the mouse models are useful because, for example, the dietary component. Now, omega-3 fatty acids that are already elongated and desaturated to eicosapentaenoate and docosahexaenoate obviously change the overall structure of the response. Because remember, in humans, the essential fatty acids are alpha-linolenic acid, 18:3, omega-3, and linoleic acid, 18:2, omega-6. And so the elongation and desaturation of those fatty acids itself regulates the relative concentrations of arachidonate for the omega-6 family, and then EPA, DPA, and DHA of the omega-3 series. And that regulation will ultimately affect the immediate response of the immune system at the level of membrane alteration of phosphoglycerol lipid, sphingolipid, containing omega-3 fatty acids because of the effect on biosynthesis, you see? So that's a very important role to consider there. Now, I want to go back and talk a little bit about proteins here. Recall from three lectures ago, not counting the epistemological lectures, that would be four lectures ago, that T cells express many adhesion molecules, and that enhances cell adhesion and amplifies ultimately cytokine pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory cytokine production. Remember that CD2, that protein, has two Ig-like extracellular domains and one long proline-rich cytoplasmic tail, and that CD58 and CD48 on the antigen-presenting cells serve as ligands to the CD2 on the human T cells. So it would be CD58 as a ligand to CD2 on human. it would be CD48 on CD2 on the rodent T cells, just so you know about the slight difference in nomenclature there. And that means cell population. Now, remember the LFA1, that's the lymphocyte function associated antigen 1. That's an important adhesion molecule. It's a polypeptide in T cells, and it is a heterodimer of integrin alpha L, which is CD11A, and beta 2, which is CD18. Okay, so you have to keep all the nomenclature in order here. And remember that LFA1 can exist in at least 3 different conformations based on its activation stages. There's a bent inactive form, a low affinity form, which is a closed headpiece isoform, and then the high affinity form, which is the open headpiece. Remember this literature and this nomenclature. So then you have ICAM1. ICAM1, of course, is the intercellular adhesion molecule 1, highly expressed on antigen-presenting cells like dendritic cells and macrophages, and serves as a ligand to LFA, okay, with extracellular domains, remember, protruding some 20 nanometers from the extended APC surface. And remember that immediately after TCR ligation, because all events here, the cytosol protein TALEN binds the CD18 cytoplasmic tail to convert the bent LFA1 to the closed headpiece conformation. And we call that inside-out signaling, remember? And also remember that ICAM1 is a low affinity to the closed headpiece form of LFA1, and binding promotes its opening. And that mediates the outside-in signaling we talk about, allowing TALEN and RAP1 to complex and bind to the cytoplasmic domains of LFA1, changes conformation to the open headpiece form, which of course then ultimately has what? The higher affinity for ICAM1. Okay. This is all adhesion protein biochemistry that we want to keep in mind as we talk about the lipids, particularly now these omega-3s. So in CD4 T cells, metabolites derived from omega-3 fatty acids, including those lipoxygenase products, those are called the pro-resolving mediators. They only prevent differentiation of human CD4 positive T cells into Th1 lineage, but they also blunt the secretion of interferon gamma, interleukin 17, and interleukin 2 by human CD4 positive T cells, and these resolvins, remember what we're talking about here, TNF-alpha, interferon gamma, and interleukin 2 secretion by fully activated human CD8 positive T cells. However, none of that induces any changes in T cell viability or, very importantly, proliferation. Now, same level activation of CD4 positive T cells isolated from the spleen of mice fed a diet rich in omega-3 fatty acids is reduced in comparison with cells isolated from mice fed normal diet. And that effect seems to be mediated by omega-3 fatty acid-induced decreases in the localization of signaling proteins, some of which we were just talking about, and both mitochondrial activity and a reassociation kinetic at the immunological synapse. In contrast to the case for human cells, however, omega-3 fatty acids decrease the proliferation of CD4 positive T cells in the murine model. See big differences there. Now, lipid rafts you know are important for the activation of CD4 positive T cells, and the incorporation of omega-3 fatty acids into the membrane, particularly phosphoglycerol lipids and even sphingolipids, of CD4 positive T cells from the mice induces changes in membrane domains. And that organization of membrane domains has been detected in the murine model and in human cells. And that may account for all the effect of the omega-3 fatty acids on CD4 positive T cell function. And I mentioned that last lecture. Now, Th17 cells, how about those in particular? We're just talking there about generally CD4 positive. Th17s has shown that omega-3 fatty acids can diminish Th17 differentiation and activation. So treatment of CD4 positive T cells isolated from human blood using an anti-CD3 and anti-TNF alpha antibody induces differentiation of cells towards Th17. This is all done in vitro. And that increase in Th17 differentiation is prevented by addition of eicosapentaenoic acid to the cells. Same level of context, CD4 positive T cell differentiation into Th17 is diminished by omega-3 fatty acids derived from human cells. Now that omega-3 mediated response are going to be those resolvins. So that's a metabolic product of omega-3 fatty acids. I want you to keep this in mind. Now this was demonstrated using those omega-3 derived resolvins in the murine model. Okay. So the products of the reaction, lipoxygenase products, right? And wild type mouse fed a diet rich in omega-3 fatty acids. And in the FAT1 murine model, which produces high levels of endogenous omega-3 fatty acids, the CD4 positive T cells fail to activate STAT3, which means the JAK-STAT pathway is somehow inhibited, probably at the membrane associated level, I would guess, in signaling. And that's in a direct response to pro-Th17 signaling as compared to the control murine model, excuse me. Now, in accordance to the decrease in the differentiation of the CD4 positive T cells into Th17s, omega-3 fatty acid supplementation does reduce interleukin-17 plasma levels. And this has been shown in young children suffering from asthma. Limitation of the interleukin-17 plasma levels by dietary omega-3 fatty acids does also seem to improve the severity of autoimmune uveitis in the murine model. So these are just various components of what we would call observations, right, in biochemistry. Now, chronic low-grade inflammation in obesity, which we've given a great deal of molecular pathophysiology discussion on, because obesity is a very important high morbidity epidemic in humans worldwide. So low-grade inflammation in obesity is at least partially driven by inflammatory crosstalk between adipocytes and interferon gamma secreting CD4 positive Th1 cells. And that's a process that can be mitigated by long chain omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids. Okay. So this has been in the literature for at least 25 years. Okay. Now, changes in CD4 positive T cell population in adipose tissue contribute to local chronic low-grade inflammation, which causally links obesity to some of the associated presentation of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease. And yes, we've discussed this recently in that very powerful mosaic we did on inflammasomes. And I'll just remind you, obese adipose tissue is indeed characterized by the accumulation of CD4 positive T helper cells at the expense of Th2 and Treg cells. And that's before changes that are observed in adipose tissue macrophage abundance. And remember what happens there. All that M1 macrophage inducing havoc by increasing pro-inflammatory response within the adipose. Remember that? That contributes directly to adipose tissue metabolic dysfunction. Whereas Th2, when it is in adipose, secreting interleukin-4 and Treg secreting interleukin-10, promote macrophage M2 polarization and a maintenance of adipose tissue metabolic homeostasis. And remember, too, that interleukin-17, which is secreted from Th17 cells, has been shown to contribute to inflammation in obese adipose tissue. All right? So now you're getting an understanding of how omega-3 fatty acids might play a role in altering the fatty acid composition and therefore sequence of events in membrane in adipose tissue, which we know otherwise is remarkably involved in pro-inflammatory responses in the adipose, which then trigger pro-inflammation throughout circulation and going back to the liver and the pancreas. Right? Those were discussions we've had in the last couple of months. So there are two distinct changes, because there are two distinct stages of CD4 positive T cell development, that antigen presentation via ligation of the MHC2, by the way, and the T cell receptor being linked to subsequent cytokine driven polarization and proliferation of those T cells. Okay. So adipocytes are indeed recognized as possessing antigen-presenting potential. That's right. Because they express, these are adipocytes, MHC class 2 related genes early in adipocyte/obesity development. And that parallels increases in markers of Th1 cell abundance, including interferon gamma. Now, in turn, among other actions, interferon gamma promotes activation of the adipocyte NOD-like receptor family pyrin domain containing 3. We know a lot about that too, because that's the inflammasome story. That's NLRP3 and the entire inflammasome as a platform-inducing inflammation. So the NLRP3 inflammasome's caspase 1 protease domain that then cleaves inactive pro-interleukin 1 beta to its active inflammatory cytokine form, interleukin 1 beta, further promotes Th1 interferon gamma production, that is transcription, translation, post-translational modification, and secretion. And that establishes a very high morbidity pro-inflammatory, I won't call it a cycle, I will call it a cyclone, between adipocytes and CD4 positive T cells that essentially then promotes, maintains, and then continually amplifies adipose tissue inflammation associated with obesity in humans. Okay. Now, let me check my time, because I want to be very careful we don't go over today. It's becoming a pet peeve of mine to go over, and it should, because it's not, as I say, it's not professional to go over. I only have 30 minutes, so I have to keep within my time. Now, this is an open lecture. Many of my lectures go over the time allotted. The bell could ring, and I wasn't quite finished, but because the students in the lecture hall were so intensely interested in what the professor was talking about, I often was allowed to finish. But when you have a cut that is not caused by me, but by the electronics of the system, of the platform I'm using, then we can't get that extra minute or two in. That's always the unfortunate thing about doing things basically in silico, right? We're doing this with computers. Yes, another way of considering in silico, I know. Anti-inflammatory effects of fish oil derived long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids has been in the literature, as I said, for at least 25 years, at least since the late 1990s. And I would say really going back, that is the bona fide referee literature, at least 10 years before that. Okay. And of course, it's eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA, and docosahexaenoic acid. Those are the two major ones you examined in research. Now, docosapentaenoic acid has also been increasingly added to, I'll say, the mix, but less so because DPA is not found in very high molar abundance. EPA and DHA are the most common omega-3 fatty acids, very long-chain omega-3 fatty acids found in human tissue. Full stop. Okay. And in the last 20, 25 years, a discussion of these omega-3 fatty acids having these anti-inflammatory effects has been in the discussion of how adipocytes and CD4-positive T cells associate with reduced CD4-positive T cell expression of markers of the Th1 subclass. That means there's going to be an alteration in what? Transcription factor mediated expression, giving you the Th1 lineage, right? Of course. Now, it's been demonstrated that anti-inflammatory effects of long-chain omega-3s on markers of the NLRP3 inflammasome activation in adipocytes, either alone or in co-culture with macrophages and CD8-positive T cells, seems to be what is related to this suppression of the immune response. So what we need to understand more is what's going to be the topic of a paper which we're opening up right now. This is a research paper published in 2021 in the journal Nutrition. It'll be in the show notes, but we're going to spend most of our time talking about it next lecture because we're running out of time here. But this paper is going to be looking at very long-chain polyunsaturated fatty acids modulating markers of interactions between CD4-positive T cells and adipocytes, and examining the induction of inflammation, the enhancement via maintenance, and then further induction of the inflammatory response in obese adipose tissue. And one of the things that's going to be analyzed are alterations in CD4-positive T cell subsets, the adipocyte antigen presentation potential itself, and of course, NLRP3 inflammasome activity. So I'm going to stop there. I'm at 28 minutes plus because we're going to start getting into this paper in depth and I don't want to stop. And I'm going to actually take this paper all the way at the level of looking at how the experiments were conducted, looking at the data sets, looking at the distillation to evidence, and then allowing the authors to give the discussion with my commentary, right? So we're going to completely dissect this paper. And the reason we're going to do it is because one of the best ones I found on looking at omega-3 fatty acids on specifically CD4-positive T lymphocytes, which is a major focus, of course, of these series of lectures. So I'm going to stop there, as I said. Hope you have a pleasant Sunday evening. Bye for now.